Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. Boy, I don't have any of the usual articles that we're looking forward to. There's no new movie reviews. There's no new TV review, but I do have an Oscar article. I've got a nice article of some happy movies for us to all watch, and just a nice collection of shorter articles. So let's get started, shall we? First of all, my Oscar article here is, pardon us, but what the F is going on with the actress categories at the Oscars? Battles for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress have been particularly confusing this year. This is by Joey Nolfi. Who knew that actresses actressing in their respective projects wouldn't be the most dramatic showcase in Hollywood as the industry continues to navigate awards season chaos in anticipation of answering the question, who will be nominated for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress among the 2025 Oscar nominations? Sometimes you get a clean sweep year where everyone from the critic and journalist groups to the industry folks align from the start on a contender such as Blue Jasmine lead Cate Blanchett. In other years, it seems like not even the trio of Golden Globe, SAG, and Critics' Choice Awards nods can vault the likes of Jennifer Lopez from Hustlers into the Oscars territory. While the distinction between the types of voters, Globes and Critics' Choice are non-industry folks, SAG and BAFTA are professional collectives with membership that crosses over into the Academy, setting the race in motion is typically important to this discussion. Looking at Best Actress first, a quad of primary contenders have crossed all boundaries and forged through with nods from all four bodies. Likely winner Demi Moore from The Substance, Emilia Perez's Carla Sofia Gascon, Anora's Mikey Madison, and Wicked actress Cynthia Erivo. Despite those contestants in the contest, the fifth slot remains a head-scratching puzzle. Before any voters cast their ballots, Maria star Angelina Jolie's experience, she's a prior winner with an additional nod, plus a Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award to her credit, felt like the easiest guarantee of the bunch, and she showed up as a regular fixture on the precursor circuit with nods from the Globes and Critics' Choice, until she stumbled with industry-leading groups. Jolie failed to show up among the SAG, where she felt like a surefire contender given her likability and star power in Hollywood, and BAFTA nominations. Days after shockingly losing the Golden Globe to I'm Still Here star Fernanda Torres, whose sweet acceptance speech afforded the Brazilian performer a flashy introduction on national TV days before Oscar voting opened. Torres's performance in an international title, I'm Still Here is also a Brazilian production, gave the project an added element of prestige, particularly among the Academy's growing international voting base. We often see these kinds of performances rise up over portrayals that might have more hardware on their report card. Lady Gaga in House of Gucci, who didn't miss any major precursor in 2021, but whom the international membership might still see as celebrities before true actors. This might also explain Lopez's historic snub for Hustlers as well. The same wave of support that could push Torres into the category might also work in favor of British actress Marianne Jean-Baptiste, whose magnificent reunion with her Secrets and Lives helmer Mike Leigh in Hard Truths also built critical steam at the start of the season, only to slightly falter when it came to racking up nominations outside of esteemed critics groups like the New York FCC and the LA FCA, and the Critics' Choice Awards. Still, she pulled off a BAFTA nod days ago, so she's not out of the question, especially as her roaring, universally appealing performance is one that anyone with a lick of sense will appreciate. While Jolie is certainly in a precarious spot, it's statistically difficult to overcome a snub from both SAG and BAFTA, she's not totally out either. With the weight of a Netflix campaign behind her, Jolie's recognition for the film comes for a skilled performance as a real-life tragic entertainment figure. That's opera star Maria Callas, who died in relative isolation in 1970s Paris, and required the actress to hone her real-life singing voice to tackle the part. Challenging an actress's traditional presence on screen is what Maria filmmaker Pablo Larraine does best, given his directing of Natalie Portman in Jackie and Kristen Stewart in Spencer toward Against Type nominations in the past. Both Portman and Stewart reframed not only their own perception as actors in the eyes of audiences, but also helped retrain the world's perceptions of the famous women they played. Larraine and Jolie pushed the same boundaries in terms of performance and their subject's legacy in Maria, which is always good for courting affection and intrigue. While Larraine and Portman traveled a safer road toward her Best Actress nomination, Portman earned both SAG and BAFTA nods, there's a statistical path forward for Jolie as evidenced by Stewart's trajectory ahead of her own 2022 nomination. Stewart similarly failed to show up at SAG and BAFTA before squeezing into that year's Best Actress lineup. Jolie is arguably the better-known star, so she could easily follow suit. The same can be said for Baby Girl's Nicole Kidman, though she's at an even bigger stat-based disadvantage than Jolie, despite winning the National Board of Review's top prize and scoring a Golden Globe nod before missing SAG, BAFTA, and Critics' Choice. And then there's Pamela Anderson. Kidman's fellow category nominee at the Golden Globes, who managed to squeeze into the SAG bracket. Such a feat was a monumental victory, given the last Showgirl's smaller profile. That's Roadside Attractions, isn't the industry's weightiest distributor, and the SAG nominating committee's wide-spanning pool of balloters hailing from all corners and demographics of the acting sector. The last Showgirl also has a narrative that simply works. It's the kind of film that, after raking in a paltry $1.5 million over its first weekend in wide release, doesn't need audience support to build its profile in the good graces of voters. The film's self-reflective underdog tale of Anderson's titular Las Vegas showgirl struggling to survive in a profession that rejects her age holds a message that deeply resonates with voters. Enough so that their affections bled over into the supporting actress category, with Jamie Lee Curtis shaking up that already chaotic race with her performance as a cocktail waitress, complete with an impressively improvised dance scene in the middle of a casino. Poised for a potential Afterglow nomination following her win for Everything Everywhere All at Once in 2023, Curtis made a late-breaking showing at SAG and BAFTA, the latter of which is even more impressive considering the film's star, Anderson, didn't even show up among the British Academy's lead category. All of that put several supporting actress contenders in trouble. Only two mainstays have gone along for the majority of the current awards run so far, presumptive winner Zoe Saldana for Emilia Perez and Ariana Grande for Wicked. Every other slot is up for grabs, with each remaining contender possessing a statistic that cancels out another competitor's and vice versa. Curtis is a safe bet, with both BAFTA and SAG, two groups that, again, share Academy membership. Elsewhere, Felicity Jones from The Brutalist and Selena Gomez from Emilia Perez have Golden Globes and BAFTA, but not SAG or Critics' Choice. Gomez, however, has the prestigious Cannes Film Festival Award for Best Actress, an honor she shares with Gascon, Saldana, and Adriana Paz, the last of whom could, and hear us out, show up as a surprise nominee. That's how you have to think of it in an age of increasingly unreliable statistics where Marina de Tavira can get in for Roma with zero precursor traction. Seriously. It was her only nomination of the entire year. based on the overwhelming support of the film around her. That logic can also be applied to Isabella Rossellini, whose report card isn't as stacked as Saldana's or Grande's, but does have a BAFTA nod and the Conclave tidal wave carrying her extremely short performance through the season. That film's overall profile needs to be studied, but that's another story for another day in the race. For now, let it be known that Stanley Tucci is in for supporting actor. Other supporting actress contenders who stand a chance, albeit a small one, include Critics' Choice and SAG-nominated Piano Lesson star Danielle Deadwyler, though she was notably snubbed in the past for Till, SAG nominee Monica Barbaro for A Complete Unknown, and The Substance's Margaret Qualley, who's got nods at the Globes and Critics' Choice Awards fueling her bid. While stats can mean everything or nothing in the contemporary awards landscape, support for an individual film can make a world of difference in races like this. A Complete Unknown and The Substance are taking hold of the conversation in bigger ways and en route to scoring major above-the-line nods, including the Best Picture category, than The Piano Lesson, which never really struck much of a chord with voters beyond Deadwyler's work. All of this is to say, don't be surprised when you're surprised upon discovering the 2025 Oscar nominations for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress. The 2025 Oscars telecast, hosted by Conan O'Brien, airs Sunday, March 2nd on ABC and Hulu at 7 p.m. Eastern Time and 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And that was pardon us, but what the F is going on with the actress categories at the Oscars? It was by Joey Nolfi. And just in case, as you can tell, that was written before the awards nominations came out. So let's take a quick look at who was nominated. As a reminder, Best Actress is Cynthia Erivo in Wicked, Carla Sofia Gascon in Emilia Perez, Mikey Madison in Anora, Demi Moore in The Substance, and Fernanda Torres in I'm Still Here. And for Best Supporting Actress, it's Monica Barbaro for A Complete Unknown, Ariana Grande for Wicked, Felicity Jones for The Brutalist, Isabella Rossellini for Conclave, and Zoe Saldana for Emilia Perez. For that light, happy list of movies, here are the 30 best family comedy movies ready to stream right now. From animated delights to live-action thrills, these films are fun to watch no matter your age. This is by Chris Snellgrove and Alana Gordon. Nothing brings a family together faster than laughter, except maybe pizza. We can't help you put dinner on the table, but if you're in search of a good movie to help elevate your quality time, look no further than this list of the 30 best family comedies compiled below. From animated classics to live-action favorites, these films are sure to provoke laughter and tears and are guaranteed to provide at least 90 minutes of blissful, argument-free fun. These are in alphabetical order, and our first movie is The Addams Family from 1991. The Addams Family is wildly entertaining, whether you're a fan of the classic show or not. That's because the kooky performances help bring every wild scene and gothic set piece to life. As an oddly macabre clan, helmed by Ralph Julia and Angelica Houston, spars with a con man who resembles their lost relative. Christopher Lloyd is stellar in dual roles, but the most notorious Addams is a certain sullen, world-weary daughter in a star-making performance. Or, better put by Entertainment Weekly's critic, best of all is the scene-stealing Christina Ricci, who plays Wednesday with the adorable saucer-eyed disengagement of a demon child from Neptune. That was Chris Snellgrove. We can watch The Addams Family on Paramount Plus. Bend It Like Beckham is from 2002. This coming-of-age soccer movie, or rather football, in England, where it's set, catapulted Keira Knightley to movie star status. But it's Bend It Like Beckham's cultural perspective and commentary that truly make it special. The story follows Jess Barma, played by Parminder Nagra, a teen girl obsessed with soccer and with David Beckham, who gave the film permission to use his name because he wanted to promote girls' soccer. Feeling suffocated by her strict Indian parents and their hope that she'll someday become a homemaker and devoted wife, Jess secretly joins a soccer team and must juggle responsibilities for both her family and her coach, played by Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. The film resonates with anyone who knows the acute angst of pretending around loved ones to be something they're not. The result is director Gurinder Chadha's supremely watchable sports film about gender, culture, sexuality, diversity, and love. And it's a touching one to boot. We can watch Bend It Like Beckham on Disney+. And at the time the movie came out, Entertainment Weekly gave it a grade of A. Big is from 1988. Big is the ultimate be careful what you wish for story. When 12-year-old Josh is too short to hop on a carnival ride and woo his crush, he yearns, with prompting by a fortune-telling machine, to be quote-unquote big. The boy wakes up the next morning as a grown-up Tom Hanks, whose joy at unexpectedly getting what he wanted is subdued by his new responsibilities and inability to hang with his not-so-big best friend. Alongside a veteran cast in supporting roles, Elizabeth Perkins as the love interest, John Hurd as the jerk co-worker, Robert Loggia as the toy company boss who's inspired by his mysterious new employee's childlike charms, Hanks transformed his career here, proving his dramatic chops and earning his first Oscar nomination. We can watch Big on Disney+. Fourth on the list is Despicable Me from 2010. Despicable Me asks us to root not just for the bad guy, but a proud supervillain. Gru, voiced by Steve Carell, whose army of loyal minions enthusiastically help their leader pull off his devious plans. To one-up his new villainous, if not pathetic, rival, voiced by Jason Segel, Gru adopts three young girls as part of an elaborate scheme, but they melt his heart quicker than a ray gun. Entertainment Weekly's critic points out that the film's artistic pedigree is a globe-trotting success, much like the very spy movies it evokes. Writing Despicable Me is an American story, from a Spanish animator's idea fleshed out by a French animation house. No wonder a certain Euro je ne sais quoi influences the aesthetic of this charming tale of bad intentions and happy endings. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of A-, and we can watch Despicable Me on Netflix. Encanto from 2021. Like a superhero movie set in a small town, Encanto is the story of a Colombian family whose children are endowed with magical abilities. Well, all except Mirabel, voiced by Stephanie Beatriz, who seemingly has no special power but must save her kin anyway. The uplifting message is perfect for a family movie night, with Entertainment Weekly's critic calling it a smiling tale about familial reconciliation and learning to see your relatives for who they are rather than who you wish they were. That said, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda's songs, especially We Don't Talk About Bruno, that turned Encanto into a genuine cultural sensation. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B, and we can watch Encanto on Disney+. Finding Nemo from 2003. Finding Nemo is as much about family as it is about fish. Following a neurotic clownfish father, Marlin, played by Albert Brooks, and his young son Nemo, played by Alexander Gould. When Nemo's curiosity gets the best of him and he's captured by a diver, his dear old dad is powerless to save him. So Marlin teams up with a forgetful new friend, played by Ellen DeGeneres, to bring his son home. Pixar populates this ocean with entertaining characters and unforgettable dangers, but the thrills won't scare young viewers about taking a dip, even with the presence of a ravenous shark. The resulting film, according to Entertainment Weekly's critic, sustains its own comic universe of intelligent life a thronging biosphere of amusement simultaneously scaled for children and pitched for knowing adults. We can watch Finding Nemo on Disney Plus. Freaky Friday is from 1976. Still better than the 2003 remake, the original Freaky Friday should be mandatory watching for all teenagers and their parents. The story focuses on a bickering mother and daughter duo, that's Barbara Harris and Jodie Foster, who switch places with one another for a single day. The results are predictably hilarious, with each one learning that walking a mile in the other's shoes isn't nearly as easy as they had imagined. Throw in performances from other old-school legends like John Astin and Dick Van Patten, and you've got a classic coming-of-age film that can bring parents and children a little closer. We can watch Freaky Friday on Disney+. Home Alone is from 1990. Home Alone is a kid's fantasy brought to life. 8-year-old Kevin, played by Macaulay Culkin, is accidentally left behind during his family's overseas Christmas vacation and gets to be the man of the house for a change. When two bumbling thieves, played by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern, attempt to rob his home, Kevin begins an elaborately violent slapstick battle of wits via booby traps involving a tarantula, paint buckets, and flamethrowers. According to Entertainment Weekly's critic, the real reason behind Home Alone's gargantuan success, of course, is the unforced, marble-mouthed performance of Macaulay Culkin, a kid whose naturalism is the obverse of every tiny primetime wise-ass from Dennis the Menace to Steve Urkel. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B. We can watch Home Alone on Disney+. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is from 1989. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids mashes together a schlocky sci-fi premise reminiscent of the 50s with the comedic sensibilities of the 80s. Rick Moranis plays a genius inventor whose miniaturization device accidentally shrinks his children to a quarter of an inch. More accurately, the kids actually shrink themselves while messing around in Dad's makeshift lab. But hey, he shouldn't have left that dangerous technology within their reach. Ignorant of their fate and upset about his professional failures, he destroys his invention, leaving them to navigate a world where even ants are major threats. Matt Frewer and Christine Sutherland provide great supporting performances, but the biggest stars are the memorable practical effects, most of which have held up remarkably well. We can watch Honey, I Shrunk the Kids on Disney+. The Incredibles from 2004. In a world where most superhero films have become CGI slurry, The Incredibles remains an original genre take that gives us beautiful family dynamics instead of post-credits teasing. The titular family is in the middle of an identity crisis. The government doesn't want supers around anymore, so they're stuck in the suburbs and masquerade as shutter normies. But their past eventually comes back to haunt them in the form of Syndrome, whom Mr. Incredible ran afoul of years earlier. Vengeance has been brewing ever since, along with plans for world domination, naturally. The result confidently distills the Silver Age of comics into a new golden age of animation. We can watch The Incredibles on Disney+. Inside Out from 2015. The real brilliance of Inside Out is that it personifies the stresses of adolescent life. When young Riley, played by Caitlin Diaz, moves from Minnesota to San Francisco, her many feelings go haywire. Those emotions get voices of their own. Amy Poehler is Joy, the head of Riley's emotional circuit board. Disgust is a diva, courtesy of Mindy Kaling. Sadness is embodied by Phyllis Smith, fear by Bill Hader, and anger by famously irate comedian Lewis Black. It's a bold approach to portraying big ideas and even bigger feelings. As Entertainment Weekly's critic observes, director Pete Docter and his creative team take this daring, conceptually abstract premise and tweak it into a battle royale for control over the tween's evolving personality. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of A, and we can watch it on Disney+. Klaus is from 2019. Klaus is a Santa Claus origin story that's enjoyable any time of the year. Starring Oscar winner J.K. Simmons as the film's eponymous hero, Klaus tells the tale of a widowed Norwegian lumberman who is recruited by the town's new postman, Jesper, played by Jason Schwartzman, to make toys for him to deliver in an effort to prove his father, the Postmaster General, wrong. But when Klaus's toys begin to cheer up the children of Smirensburg, a community whose inhabitants are perpetually engaged in a feud between two familial clans, Jesper and Klaus must step out of their comfort zones to help save the town from itself. A Spanish-American animated film marking the debut of director Sergio Pablos, who also developed the concept for Despicable Me, Klaus offers a new perspective on the gift-giving hero of the Christmas season. It's not Santa Claus, it's Klaus, Simons, who once was a mall Santa himself, tells Entertainment Weekly. He's certainly not the cuddly Saint Nick that most people see when they go to Macy's when we first meet him. We can watch Klaus on Netflix. Kung Fu Panda is from 2008. This animated family movie sees Jack Black voice a lazy panda, Po, who must master martial arts by training under a strict, eccentric master, played by Dustin Hoffman. That simple premise kicks off a slapstick action comedy buoyed by great voice performances by true blue action stars like Angelina Jolie and Jackie Chan. Kung Fu Panda is as inspiring in conception as it is unique in execution, with Entertainment Weekly's critic writing just about all animated movies teach you to believe in yourself. But the image of a face-stuffing panda turned yowling Bruce Lee dervish is as unlikely and touching an advertisement for that message as we've seen in quite some time. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of A-, and we can watch Kung Fu Panda on Peacock. Labyrinth is from 1986. Labyrinth is proof that, in the right director's hands, classic fantasy storytelling translates perfectly to modern viewing. Jim Henson is one such director, and his tale of a young girl, played by Jennifer Connelly, who must rescue her infant brother from the Goblin King's, that's David Bowie's, labyrinth before the little one turns into a goblin, is as weirdly fascinating now as it was decades ago. The premise has all the simplicity of a Dungeons & Dragons starter adventure, but that's okay. Its straightforward narrative helps us appreciate how the film sings, literally, thanks to the mesmerizing and earwormy songs performed by the late, great Bowie. We can watch Labyrinth on Peacock. Lego Movie 2014. Just months before he took the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise by storm, Chris Pratt voiced a hapless Lego figure who is mistaken for someone special enough to keep an evil tyrant, played by Will Ferrell, from destroying the world. With Hollywood giving us one lukewarm multiverse after another, the Lego movie's fierce playfulness and originality remind us of what we've been missing. How many other films offer up two Liam Neeson cops, one good and one bad, respectively, for the price of one? As Entertainment Weekly critic notes, the movie invents a kind of child-friendly meta-universe in which the playthings on display are at once objects and characters. The transparently fake Lego constructions embody the pure spirit of make-believe. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of A, and we can watch the Lego movie on Amazon Prime Video. Number 16 on our list is Matilda from 1996. And before I tell you about Matilda, I'll remind everybody that you're listening to Entertainment Weekly. I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com, and this is a list of 30 child-friendly movies that are available today. Matilda is from 1996, as I said, and to younger audiences, Matilda will read as the offspring of Harry Potter and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Our titular character, played by Mara Wilson, endures awful parents, played by Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman, both adorably hammy, and a cartoonishly abusive principal, though she never loses her sense of wonder. Matilda's hard-knock life lightens considerably, however, once she develops telekinesis. Thanks in large part to DeVito's unforgettable direction, Matilda remains the best ever Roald Dahl adaptation. Entertainment Weekly's critic pinpoints the enduring appeal of this story of childhood vengeance, calling it an ideal rental for the legions of kids looking for a film in which they triumph at last. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B+, and we can watch Matilda on Max. The Mitchells vs. the Machines from 2021. Every family has problems, but the Mitchell family has big ones, like a robot apocalypse. In this animated comedy, the dysfunctional family's already messy road trip is thrown into further chaos when robots attempt to take over the world. As the only people left to fight them off, it's up to the Mitchells, voiced by Abby Jacobson, Danny McBride, and Maya Rudolph, and director Mike Rianda, to take out the machines and save humanity. But to do that, they'll have to ensure their family's connection to each other is stronger than their connection to their phones and iPads. In an ironic twist, the Mitchells versus the Machines, whose message warns of the dangers of relying too much on technology, employs both hand-drawn and CGI animation to create its visuals. We can watch this Mitchells vs. the Machines on Netflix. Monsters, Inc. from 2001. Monsters, Inc. taps into the woefully unexplored idea that children may embrace cinematic monsters rather than cower from them. Accordingly, the antics of two top scarers, played by John Goodman and Billy Crystal, fall flat when they try to frighten a young girl, but their improbable relationship with her could completely revolutionize how the monsters interact with humanity. The ensuing film combines soul with CGI, fortifying the lofty reputation Pixar had already built by 2001, just 6 years into its theatrical run. Entertainment Weekly's critic praises the movie for striking the right balance across generations, writing, "Indeed, Monsters, Inc. has got that swing, that zippity multi-level awareness of kids' eye sensibilities and adult-pitched humor." We can watch Monsters, Inc. on Disney+. The Muppets is from 2011. Co-writer and star Jason Segel infuses the Muppets with all the intense devotion of a true superfan. The story here is very slight. With the help of his girlfriend Mary, played by Amy Adams, Segel's Gary and his Muppet friend Walter must foil a plot by an oil-hungry baddie, played by Chris Cooper, with a full-fledged maniacal laugh, to destroy the Muppet studio for more of that liquid gold. Though there have been countless Muppet films and TV shows, this quality 2011 comedy revitalized the brand for a new era without sacrificing any of its classic charms. As Entertainment Weekly's critic explains, for adults, the movie's gentle, clever, unironic humor feels freshly, trendily retro now, enhanced by laughs provided in cameos from a very up-to-date roster of stars. At the time, they gave the movie a grade of B+, and we can watch The Muppets on Disney+. We're up to number 20 on our list, and it's Paddington from 2014. There are few things the internet can agree on, but the most undisputed dominance of the 2015 semi-animated film Paddington, starring beloved children's book character Paddington Bear, just happens to be one of those things. Garnering a 97% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and hailed for its charming script, family-friendly content, and excellent voice acting, courtesy of star Ben Whishaw, the movie has since amassed a following of Paddington loyalists, prompting a sequel in 2017 and a threequel slated for release in February. If you're looking for a heartwarming film, Paddington should be number one on your list. And if you need a topical reason to check out the movie, you should know that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky voiced everyone's favorite bear in the film's Ukrainian release. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of A, and we can watch Paddington on Max. Here's another oldie, The Parent Trap, is from 1998. Call it a tale of two Lohans. In this modern remake of The Parent Trap, Lindsay Lohan plays twins who live on opposite sides of the country and switch places as a gambit to reunite their divorced parents, played by Dennis Quaid and Natasha Richardson. In her feature film debut, Lohan perfectly fills the shoes, all four of them, of original star Haley Mills, delivering two memorable performances as separated sisters turned best friends. The spectacular final result was cause for celebration from Entertainment Weekly's critic, who writes, "It's no small feat that this kind-hearted remake is as graceful as it is, an homage as well as an update for an era of even more split families and more fervent children's wishes for the magical ability to make things whole." We can watch The Parent Trap on Disney+. The Princess Bride is from 1987. The Princess Bride sounds straightforward. A boy, played by Cary Elwes, meets a princess, played by Robin Wright, and sparks fly. But their love falters when she's kidnapped by an evil monarch, played by Chris Sarandon. However, that simple description omits the colorful characters, bizarre adventures, and brilliant dialogue that have helped this film stand the test of time. A classic sword fight, a pit of despair, a six-fingered man, a lifelong revenge plot, and several rodents of unusual size. No matter how many movies children watch with their parents, none of them quite fit that description. Ultimately, every performance from Andre the Giant to Mandy Patinkin is pitch perfect, and this film is a crown jewel of Rob Reiner's royal reign in Hollywood. We can watch The Princess Bride on Disney+. Rango is from 2011. Rango the Chameleon, played by Johnny Depp, has spent his life as a family pet, learning how to blend in. But when his terrarium lands in the middle of the Mojave Desert, he finally gets his chance to stand out. An animated comedy with plenty of references to the world of old-school spaghetti westerns, Rango tells the story of an unwitting hero who's named the sheriff of a small frontier town and is tasked with discovering what happened to the area's water supply. Entertainment Weekly's critic praises the acting, writing, "Thanks to Depp's own chameleon-like performance and the camaraderie of the cast's voice recording sessions run like live theater, the script has a lively, improvised feel. A family comedy that comes out with guns drawn and a comedy as dry as the film's setting, Rango is a smart, unique watch." At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave it a grade of B, and we can watch Rango on Pluto TV. The Sandlot is from 1993. The Sandlot's picture of adolescence teeters between awkward and awesome. The film follows a group of baseball-loving suburban kids who, during the summer of 1962, navigate the treacherous world of playground insults and a fearsome, ball-gobbling dog dubbed The Beast. Entertainment Weekly's critic puts the film's nostalgic appeal succinctly in the review, writing, "As the gang learns to work as a team off the field, the movie never loses its quick pace or its sense of fun. Old baseball wisdom, the best teams win with strong fundamentals. So do the best movies." At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B+, and we can watch The Sandlot on Disney+. School of Rock is from 2003. School of Rock resonates across generations because everyone wishes they had a teacher as cool as Jack Black's substitute imposter-turned-rock-and-roll guardian angel, Dewey Finn. He poses as an educator for a talented group of students, but his energetic passion for music and his affection for the kids are completely genuine. And let's be honest, when you're at an uptight prep school, the only true anecdote is the infectious energy of a Jack Black type. As Entertainment Weekly's critic notes, when they finally get up to play at the Battle of the Bands, it's an ecstatic scene, yet you may also wipe away a tear as you realize that Dewey has become a great teacher after all, and that Jack Black, raising his goblet of rock, now rules. We can watch School of Rock on Paramount+. Shrek is from 2001. Don't monsters and outcasts deserve a happily ever after too? That's the question at the heart of Shrek, the insanely quotable animated classic about an ogre played by Mike Myers who agrees to rescue a beautiful princess played by Cameron Diaz for an awful lord to restore peace in his own swamp. But the damsel isn't in distress, the monster isn't so bad, and some raunchy jokes may go over kids' heads, but will likely delight parents. In short, Entertainment Weekly's critic insists Shrek succeeds because it's such a feisty but good-natured embrace of the inner ogre in everyone, and such an irreverent smackdown of the establishment in all of its hi-ho tyranny. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave Shrek a grade of A, and we can watch it on Peacock. Sierra Burgess is a Loser is from 2018. A high school rom-com based on the 19th century French play Cyrano de Bergerac, Sierra Burgess is a Loser is a modern love story in the style of literary adaptations like Clueless or 10 Things I Hate About You. Sierra Burgess, that's played by Stranger Things' Sharon Purser, is an average-looking American kid, which in rom-com land makes her worthy of ridicule. Unlike other high school movie protagonists, however, Sierra isn't looking for a glow-up or an invitation to the popular crowd. But when she lands in the middle of a romantic mix-up, Sierra finds herself pretending to be someone else for the very first time in her life. The film might not break genre conventions, but Entertainment Weekly's reviewer writes that Purser is refreshingly relatable, and Peter Kavinsky-obsessed fans will love getting Noah Centineo as another jock with a heart of gold. At the time, Entertainment Weekly gave the movie a grade of B, and we can watch Sierra Burgess as a Loser on Netflix. Toy Story from 1995. Toy Story is literally a child's fantasy come to life, imagining a world where toys have lives of their own and reanimate whenever the kids leave the room. However, the status quo enforced by cowboy doll Woody, played by Tom Hanks, is disrupted by the arrival of spaceman Buzz Lightyear, played by Tim Allen, who adamantly believes he's an actual intergalactic ranger rather than a plaything. The ensuing power struggle between Woody and Buzz threatens to put their owner's childish things away forever in Pixar's debut feature. The story's keen sense of childhood wonder was not lost on Entertainment Weekly's critic, who writes, "The beauty of Toy Story is the way it expresses the essence of child's play, that pretending is the art of dreaming when you're wide awake." We can watch Toy Story on Disney+. We have two more here. Our next is Wreck-It Ralph from 2012. Like Toy Story for gamers, Wreck-It Ralph imagines that game characters live in a secret digital world whenever the arcade closes. Ralph, played by John C. Reilly, wants to stop being the villain who always loses to the cheerful Fix-It Felix, played by Jack McBrayer. leading him on a quest to finally become a hero. Of course, as Ralph discovers, every hero needs a good sidekick, and Ralph's is the perpetually glitchy Vanellope, played by Sarah Silverman, from A Racing Game. The resulting animated feature charmed Entertainment Weekly's critic, who writes, "There are more video game cameos and winks than you can shake a Wiimote at, but the real success of the film is its emotional core in the relationship between the two misfits. At the time, they gave it a grade of B+, and we can watch Wreck-It Ralph on Disney+. And the last item on our list, Zootopia from 2016. Move over, buddy cop films. Zootopia has pioneered the buddy fox genre. We follow an eager bunny, played by Jennifer Goodwin, who has just joined the police force, and her reluctant new partner, a sly con artist of a fox, played by Jason Bateman. Together, they work on a case whose outcome may deeply affect their world's social order, in which predators and prey work alongside each other. As Entertainment Weekly's critic notes, the film brings in deep socio-political metaphors, plenty of food for thought regarding prejudice and tolerance, and zany slapstick zippy one-liners. At the time, they gave it a grade of B, and we can watch Zootopia on Disney+. So that's our list of the 30 best family comedy movies ready to stream right now. It was by Chris Snellgrove and Elena Gordon. One of those movies mentioned was Home Alone. And here's an article. Catherine O'Hara disagrees with her Home Alone director on what the McAllisters did for work. This is an Entertainment Weekly exclusive. The Schitt's Creek actress behind Kate McAllister tells Entertainment Weekly a different theory as to those mannequins in their home. This is by Nick Romano. Home Alone always seems to re-enter the cultural conversation each Christmas season, but last year, director Chris Columbus answered a long-gestating, burning question. How did Kevin's parents afford that lavish manor? Back then, screenwriter John Hughes and I had a conversation about it, and we decided on what the jobs were, he said during an interview explaining how Catherine O'Hara's Kate McAllister was a very successful fashion designer, noting the mannequins displayed in the house. John Hurd's Peter McAllister could have worked in advertising, though the director couldn't recall a specific job. Speaking with Entertainment Weekly a month later to promote her Super Bowl ad for Michelob Ultra, O'Hara shares a different theory. "I hate to disagree with anything Chris Columbus says, but I do with that," the actress says, "because I look at those mannequins as she's successful at something, but she also has all these kids and wants to be a great homemaker. At one point, she thought, I'm gonna make all their clothes. And that lasted about a week." At the very least, Columbus ruled out that Peter McAllister was involved in organized crime, which became a popular fan theory over the years. Home Alone marked its 34th anniversary last year. In December, some of the actors who played various siblings and cousins of Kevin's reunited for a meet and greet at an event in New Jersey. Macaulay Culkin, aka Kevin himself, then popped up in a Kim Kardashian music video dressed as Santa. As for the real-life McAllister residence, located in Winnetka, Illinois, it sold to new homeowners for $5.25 million. "We're thrilled with the way this home captured everyone's attention and hearts due to its well-deserved place in cinematic history and the timeless holiday memories it evokes," listing agents Don McKenna and Katie Moore of Coldwell Banker Realty said in a statement at the time. O'Hara can now be seen in Michelob Ultra's Super Bowl commercial for this year's game day, which will be held on Sunday, February 9th. The actress reunites with her Beetlejuice co-star Willem Dafoe in a pickleball-themed spot, which sees them scamming and squashing actual pickleball stars on the court. That was Catherine O'Hara disagrees with her Home Alone director on what the McAllisters did for work. And it was by Nick Romano. Here's something for the movies section from a movie that just came out recently. Will Ferrell declined offer to snuggle a real alligator for You're Cordially Invited. Absolutely not. This is by Jessica Wang. And I'll mention this article does contain spoilers for You're Cordially Invited. We are close to the end of the time for the show, so if you want to, you can turn down your volume just for a couple minutes, but please come back. Alligator method acting? No, thank you. Writer-director Nicholas Stoller and the cast of his new Prime Video comedy, You're Cordially Invited, quickly shut down an offer for star and producer Will Ferrell to snuggle with a real alligator for a scene in the movie. Ferrell stars opposite Reese Witherspoon, also a producer, as adversaries Jim and Margot, who discover that the destination venue they've reserved for their loved one's wedding, Jim for his daughter, Jenny, played by Geraldine Viswanathan, Margot for younger sister, Nev, played by Meredith Hanger, accidentally double-booked them on the same weekend. At first, they try to coexist in the tight quarters, but soon find themselves embroiled in an escalating all-out war, one that culminates in Jim lying in wait in Margot's hotel room with an alligator, intending to unleash it upon her. Of course, Ferrell did not film with a real alligator, opting instead for an animatronic version. However, Stoller tells Entertainment Weekly, "We did get a video from an animal handler who said she had a very docile alligator that Will Ferrell could hug and hold." We were like, absolutely not. That is not happening. Ferrell and Witherspoon make for a dynamic nemesis duo in, surprisingly, their first on-screen feature together. For the filmmaker behind Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Get Him to the Greek, among other romps, the idea of that dream pairing led to the movie's inception. I was like, I would love to try to make a movie for Will Ferrell and Reese Witherspoon, says Stoller. I've been obsessed with both actors my whole career, so I dug in and started to create the characters and the story and the specifics of it. The results are delightfully messy. Stoller breaks down some of the memorable moments. On filming with that animatronic alligator and unwittingly continuing a Will Ferrell trend, Jim wrestles the alligator himself after realizing his plan is a terrible idea, getting battered and bloodied before eventually throwing it out of the window. There was some concern that the robotic reptile would not look authentic, but Stoller is pleased with the outcome. What's funny is when you look at videos of alligators swimming around, they just look fake, he notes. They look like logs. That's one of the ways they trick prey and stuff. They brought in the animatronic gator and two guys controlled it with remote controls. I was worried people would think it's fake because, again, all real alligators look fake, so I gave the alligator more slithers than an alligator would have. The animatronic critter, adds Stoller, was really heavy. Will could pick it up and throw it around, but that was still heavy, so I wanted to shoot it pretty quickly so he wouldn't get hurt throwing this thing around. The sequence continues a trend of feral fake fighting animals on screen. We can see a bear in both Anchorman and Semi-Pro, and a raccoon in Elf. I didn't realize that, he said with a laugh. I just knew it needed to be insane. It just seemed like the peak of craziness to me. On casting Nick Jonas as a temperamental pastor. For the dual weddings, the idea was to highlight the contrast between the two parties. One bride, Viswanathan, is young, while the other, Hanger, is a bit more mature and posh. With Reese's sister's wedding, it's a fancy southern family. They would have had a family priest, notes Stoller, but they'd want a young, cool priest, so it seemed fun to have a super handsome priest. The Jonas Brothers musician is actually a friend of Ferrell and his producing partner, Jessica Elbaum. They reached out to him, and he was into doing the idea. on having father and daughter duet to the low-key sexual Islands in the Stream. During the wedding ceremony, the close-knit Jim and Jenny duet to the slightly inappropriate Islands in the Stream by Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers, much to the guests' discomfort due to the making love with each other lyrics. The track was chosen early in the script's inception and stuck. I was like, I'll probably replace it at some point, and then there's just no better song, says Stoller. Because it's a very innocent song. You have to believe a father and daughter would sing it, but it's also very sexual, so it's a funny combination. And yes, those are Farrell and Viswanathan's real singing voices, as well as Witherspoon's real singing voice in the mid-credits duet. You're Cordially Invited is streaming now on Prime Video. That was Will Ferrell declined offer to snuggle a real alligator for You're Cordially Invited. And it was by Jessica Wang. And here we are. We've used up all of our time again for Entertainment Weekly. Thank you all for listening. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Please come back next week, and we'll be reading again from their website, which is ew.com. Until then, goodbye.